Welcome to Tokyo Game Life, a Tokyo-based video game podcast focusing on Nintendo and gaming culture in Japan's capital. Your host, Mono, here to bring you a slice of gaming life from Tokyo. Today's feature is about the interactive augmented reality experience, Pokemon Colors. Mixing projection mapping with exercise activities, it's a unique Pokemon exhibition that's unlike anything else. Returning guest Vincent from Gamer Travels Japan joins me as we chat about bicycling to see Charizard, fishing up Pokemon, and shaking trees to find that ever-elusive Snorlax. In the games, I chat about the Japanese sweets-themed Kashido and give some final thoughts on Princess Peach Showtime. Let's start with Vincent from Gamer Travels Japan and Pokemon Colors. Today's feature is about the interactive exhibit Pokemon Colors. Part playground, part extrasensory experience, part light show, it's a vivid Pokemon-branded event that's popped up a few times here in Japan. Joining me to chat all about this unique exhibit is a special guest. So guest, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Vincent Ong. I'm Gamer Travels Japan on Instagram. So I'm a personal shopper for Filipinos here who want to buy games in Tokyo. And one of the main goals of my page is, just like Tokyo Game Life, help gamers travel in Tokyo or around Japan. And I'm actually here to talk a bit about Pokemon Colors because I did shoot some video, but I was too lazy to make it. I think it's something worth sharing, I think, with a lot of gamers.
Thanks for joining me yet again. You appeared on the Monster Hunter Cafe episode, the Pokemon Cafe episode, and this time we've got no food to talk about, but go ahead and lay the foundation. What is Pokemon Colors?
Okay, so Pokemon Colors, at first, I really didn't know what it was about. I saw, you know, as a tourist, you just plan your events. As you go near the date of you actually traveling there, you actually look at websites and events that are actually happening. And one of that I stumbled upon was Pokemon Colors. And all I could imagine, it looked like an interactive event with colors. But I was more intrigued by the design because it had silhouettes of Pokemon. You know, it had this really, I guess you could say, adult-looking, artsy-looking way of portraying Pokemon, which really caught my eye. So I really didn't expect what was going to happen until I went there. And when I went there, I realized how much Pokemon is really forward-thinking in public relations and world domination. Because this is Pokemon Colors is a way to teach kids how to exercise. There are interactive elements that get kids moving. It helps people who are naysayers of Pokemon or video games in general. And they say, oh, the Pokemon company is just out to get your money and make you lazy, right? Or make you fatter, as we talked about in the Pokemon Cafe.
Yeah.
Right? Or just be consumerist and buy stuff. And this is actually an activity to get kids to actually move around and be active, you know.
How would you describe the overall aesthetic of Pokemon Colors?
Well, Pokemon Colors is... it's a small, you can say, theme park. It's basically a room with interactive arcade games around it. So one is you're on a bike, and there's a screen in front of you. And when you pedal, the screen actually gains color and more Pokemon go around there. And so as you can imagine, other arcade games are around coloring your world through activity. So one was shaking an actual tree. Fruits will come out of the screen. You know, and the goal is for the Snorlax to come. And one of the interesting things is it's very Japanese because it's all about team effort,
right?
All of the games, as I remember, are all about everyone trying to make the world color together.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how to describe what it actually looks like. It kind of reminds me of an iPhone background, the way it mixes the colors. And there are a lot of 3D models, and they're these very stark colorful blocks that kind of feel like the 8-bit graphics turned into 3D. Yeah. Did the look of the graphics remind you of anything?
I think the looks of graphics, remind me like very iPhone. But it's, again, a step forward of wanting to see, well, Pokemon in 3D. And, you know, a life-size Pokemon in 3D is different. And one of the games that I really did like was you have to hit a ball into the screen, and there are blocks there, and as you knock off the blocks, you start seeing more Pokemon appear in the screen as well. I think as an adult, I was actually more worried because it's designed for kids that I might destroy. But it's pretty sturdy.
Right. Yeah. Unlike the Pokemon Cafe, I have been to this one. The first event was in Ginza in 2021, but it has since expanded to other parts of Japan, the most recent being in August of 2023 in Yokohama, which you went to. And it was created in cooperation with 110, which is a Japanese design firm and event planning organization. And looking at their other events, they all do seem to be somewhat similar in terms of how they look. There's a lot of projection mapping. Yeah. They also worked on the UI UX for a Momotaro Dentetsu browser game. So that's another gaming connection. But this type of event where there's a lot of lights and sort of AR elements seem to be pretty popular in Japan. Why do you think that is?
I think for Tokyo, and it brings to mind what you said about what the theme was. Actually, it just popped in my head that this reminds me of Pokemon trying to be like Team Lab, right? Team Lab is one of the most popular interactive theme parks in Japan, and they just opened actually, right, this month. And I think it's practically because of Tokyo. One of the interesting things about when people think about Japan, they think about the future, and Tokyo particularly is trying to lead that, right? It's not all the time in Japan, right? There's still fax machines.
Yeah. Right?
Or I saw payphones in some areas of Tokyo. When you think of Japan, you think about technology, robots. And I think the Pokemon company is very smart in seeing that they can make, one, their own Team Lab experience, right? They've collaborated with another famous theme park as well. So this is their little step of having a theme park experience slowly. And I think second, this interactive element, particularly this, is to get people moving as well, right? I guess to get people more active. But I think it's just part of Japanese culture to walk around, right? And to enjoy nature. And this, it really ties into nature, this thing between technology and nature, right? Yeah. So I think that's where maybe the thematic comes out, and it clearly fits the Pokemon brand in this case.
Yeah, and I think these AR, I don't know how to describe it, projection mapping or AR visual experiences, they are very popular in Japan. I've been to four different ones. I've been to, of course, Team Lab. I've been to Pokemon Colors. I went to a Van Gogh one. I went to one that was hosted by Samsung. I went to another one at a zoo. So it's a very popular trend. And I think it's really appealing because it's very Instagrammable. It's great for photographs. So going back to Pokemon Colors, the first one was in Ginza in late 2021. And I found the event online, and a lot of the marketing for it was pretty vague because it's kind of a hard thing to explain. We're trying our best now, but it is kind of hard to explain unless you're actually there. But you can imagine all the walls are these projection mapping or these images projected onto the walls, but they have interactive elements with them as well. So you can affect what's on the wall. And when I went to the venue, I was pretty surprised about what it actually was and all the activities they had. So we've talked about a few of them, but let's run through our favorite activities. What was the one standout activity for you?
I think I mentioned the knocking out the blocks on the screen and actually make it go. You know, anything that really was fun to watch. And the other one was, right, I think the witches really shows the thematic of is the silhouette. So it's basically Pokemon silhouettes. So there are small iPad size screens where you can touch the silhouette of Pokemon and it flies around. So I had that more because of the aesthetic. I think that's what drew me into the event was the silhouette aesthetic. It looked a bit more mature, which is fascinating as an event really for kids.
Right? Yeah, it is kind of a weird mix because it is a kid's playground in terms of what you're doing. Yeah. But the overall aesthetic and the way it looks definitely feels more adult oriented or a bit more abstract and artistic than you would expect. For me, I think my favorite activity was the bicycle one where you pedal for a few minutes and then you watch a screen that tracks your progress. And at the end, a big Charizard flies out. So you got to get your camera ready to take a picture of Charizard. You don't have a whole lot of time.
I don't, because you can't record it. You can't pedal and take a picture.
Oh, yeah. I had my wife there, so she was on Charizard duty when I was pedaling. So I was very lucky. And one thing about the activities is that they all are pretty active and hands-on. You don't just walk around and take pictures at photo spots. Yeah. What did you think about them gamifying this overall experience?
I think it's, again, strengthening the Pokemon brand. And that's why a lot of people don't get that Pokemon is more than just a game now. And I have to talk about also being as a personal shopper is you realize how much merchandise comes into Pokemon every month. It is its yeah. So it's not just the game, as much as people complain about the graphics of the game, right? Why is it not up to, you know, to other AAA titles? It's because the Pokemon company does need the game. At the same time, they don't need the game because they've been doing things that expand their world. And so maybe kids don't even, now they have Pokemon Sleep, right? So now kids don't even need to play the main game to understand what Pokemon is. And now right. This is another way to get kids, it builds a core memory. If I was a kid, then I think doing this activity will be something I'll remember as a kid because it is very interactive.
Yeah, a few of the other activities they have there, there's a fishing one where you have something that kind of resembles an old school fishing controller, and then you can fish up Pokemon. I got a Cloyster, which I imagine would be really hard to fish up in real life. Yeah. And another one, the one you said it was your favorite, it was also at the Ginza event where it has a big, I would call it a playpen of all these plastic balls, and you just kind of throw the balls at the wall, and you're trying to catch the Pokemon or maybe hit the Pokemon. I don't know if they're actually caught or not, but you're just throwing the balls at the Pokemon on the wall, which is pretty fun because, like you said earlier, it's kind of black and white at first, but then it gets more colorful and more Pokemon appear. I am a bit suspicious about the accuracy because sometimes you're throwing it right at the Pokemon and it doesn't register, but sometimes it's a bit more lenient. So how much you're affecting it is a bit, I don't know, not 100% accurate, but that's part of the appeal. You don't really care if it's super accurate or not. You just want to throw the ball.
It is for kids, after all. I think I wanted to say also that it is going to be quite packed. When was it in Ginza?
In 2021.
Summer as well?
Like winter, I want to say, late 2021. Oh, okay. So kind of the pandemic was still in the pandemic, but a bit tapering off a bit.
Oh, okay. Because I went there summer, which is August, right? So it doesn't necessarily have a fixed date when they have it. But it is successful. When I was there, it was packed with kids. And you think that you will not get to actually try all the activities, but you do eventually. But there is like a long line between getting from activity one to activity two. You need to be patient.
Another activity we didn't mention, I think we talked about a little bit, but there's the huge, it looks like a punching bag, but you shake it and it's supposed to shake a tree on the wall. How would you describe it?
I guess a pole, a fat pole, right, that you can actually shake, which actually mimics a tree trunk, right? And then you can actually shake it. And then the idea is to, I guess, get Snorlax to come out, which is what I was motivated to.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the merch. What kind of Pokemon Colors merch items are there?
I was trying to hoard as much as I want, but it was pricey, again, because it is an exclusive event. But I do like the aesthetic. So I do have the postcards. I have a set of postcards of the Pokemon silhouettes. So you have the starters, I remember, and like a Charizard one. But I know there's six. And there are keychains again. So again, it doesn't look too cutesy, right?
Right. If
from afar, it doesn't look that you're a Pokemon fan. Right. It looks aesthetically pleasing. I remember people wanting the jacket as well of the Pokemon colors. So they have the logo is a Pokeball, right? But it's a bit glossy, 3D glossy. Yeah. A prismatic color.
Yeah. I love the merch they sell there. It kind of seems oriented towards adults, even though the actual event is a kid's playground. But all the merch they sell is, I guess, for mom and dad or the older Pokemon fans. So they have t-shirts. They have, of course, clear files. They have iPhone cases and things like that, all with the Pokemon Colors aesthetic. There's nothing like plushies or anything really kid-focused. So it is kind of unusual where pretty much all the items are something that kind of only adults would use. I don't know if a kid would actually like some of the merch here, but the older people do. What kind of merch would you have liked to see at Pokemon Colors?
I guess you said, there are no plushes. But it'd be nice to have a Pokemon plush in the silhouette or a pillow, right? I'm not sure if they had it. And one of the things that actually I like now merchandise is like this eye mask.
Oh.
I think that would work well, right? Because it's a glossy, prismatic look if they actually had that as well.
Is there any sort of themed event or activity you think Pokemon is missing out on? If you could host any type of Pokemon event, what would it be?
I think Pokemon event. At the moment, that's a very good question. I think now, is there any Pokemon concert? I think that's,
Not really. I'm sure they've had it before, but
I think that's what we're talking about, their world domination. It seems they've gotten a lot of places, but not Pokemon music, right? Which they're slowly doing, right? They're actually, I think they got Ed Sheeran for the end of Pokemon Scarlet. Yeah, so it's to get into really J-pop, right? I think that would kind of seal their world domination because as we're talking, they're actually veering towards theme parks. They have the merch down. They have the anime already, right? To actually have a Pokemon concert with action, if they're getting all these superstar artists, that would actually make them rule the world, I guess.
Yeah, Pokemon Colors is a time-limited event, so it's not happening as we're speaking. So it's hard to say when it will happen again, but I'm sure it will because they've done it a few times over the years, and it seems to be fairly popular. So I wouldn't be surprised if in 2024 it pops up yet again. What kind of advice would you give to somebody who visits Pokemon Colors for the first time?
Don't worry again about actually lining up because there's enough time to go around and see all the activities. Second, for as an adult, I think we can post this right in your posts, or is the actual merchandise is really cool. So save some money because you can't actually come back, right? Once you leave Pokemon Colors, you can re-enter.
Right.
So that's why it's so hard to leave because do I buy this or not buy this, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's make sure you have enough money to, you can check their Twitter account and actually check what merchandise and the prices. So be prepared, I guess, basically you can't actually return. And these are items you can't even find in the Pokemon store.
Yeah, that's something very unique about it. And I think it's definitely, for Pokemon fans, it is a very fun activity, especially for kids. But if you're an adult, there's definitely stuff there that you would find interesting because there's not really a whole lot of other events that are like it. And it's a totally different look for Pokemon. And it's very unorthodox compared to what you would expect for a Pokemon event.
Yeah. And I think compared to other events is that it's difficult to get to because you see, that's why we wanted to talk about this because everyone talks about the Pokemon Center and then Pokemon Cafe online, right?
Yeah.
You still have a lot of content on that, but there's not enough content about the other stuff Pokemon Company does. I still need to go to the museum. They have a museum collaboration, right?
Are you talking about the Fossil Museum?
Yeah, the Fossil Museum.
Oh, yeah. I want to go to that one as well.
Yeah, so you can actually get a Pikachu with the archaeologist Indiana Jones hat, right? So I think that for Pokemon fans, we need to share that there are stuff beyond what you see online. And just look, I guess, follow the Pokemon Twitter account, right? For these Japan exclusive events that no one really broadcasts about.
Right.
But I think people should know about.
All right. I think we touched on all the important parts of Pokemon Colors. So Gamer Travels Japan, where can people find you?
Okay. So you can find me at Gamer Travels Japan on Instagram. And I guess I'll be back in Japan this May. If you have something that you'd like for me to find, just let me know. This will motivate me to make my own content about Pokemon Colors as well.
Great. And the links to everything are in the podcast description. So listeners, check it out. Gamer Travels Japan, once again, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. See you.
First game I want to talk about is one I doubt many people have heard of, Kashido from Kadokawa. I think most Western gamers know Kadokawa as the guys who own FromSoft, but they are a huge publishing and multimedia company here in Japan. They even have their own sort of mini theme park right outside of Tokyo, Kadokawa Cultural Park. It has a gigantic, artistically designed library, museums, restaurants, shops, a fountain, a sculpture forest, and yes, even some very, very small Elden Ring decorations in one of the restaurants. The whole complex is quite awesome, but not very video game related, so I didn't think about covering it. But Kadokawa does publish quite a few games, but it is an assortment of random titles, like the Legend of Heroes games, Yume Nikki, Langrisser 1 and 2, and of course, Unko Curry, which has the English title, Full of Crap. Kaishito is only their third game they've ever brought over to the West on the Switch. But once you play the game, you can kind of understand that it was probably an easy game to publish themselves. Oh, and as for the developer, it's AdGlobe Inc., which is a tech company that offers a lot of different services, including game development. They're basically just a company you hire to actually program your game, and they don't seem to have any notable resume, mostly just support work on mobile games. I just randomly stumbled across Kaishito, and the key art instantly grabbed me. It showcases some wagashi, aka Japanese sweets, and art from the classic shoujo mangaka Yumiko Igarashi. I'm a sweet tooth in general, but I specifically am a huge fan of wagashi. And even going further than that, nerikiri, which are the elaborately sculpted sweets made from red or white bean paste that mimic something from nature. When you say wagashi, nerikiri is what pops into most people's heads. And I used to actually study Japanese tea ceremony before the pandemic, and serving wagashi with the tea is a major component. You have to think carefully about what type of sweet you serve and if it fits the theme of the ceremony. And matcha and wagashi, this is peak Japan living. It really doesn't get better than that combo. So a game focused on wagashi, even on a very surface level, has my attention. Now, this is actually based on a board game Kadokawa published in 2022. So yes, it is technically just a digital adaptation of the board game, which helps you understand why Kadokawa just hired some random company to program the game. Because all the rules, art, and design were already in place. Gaming has a long history of adapting board games, but it is a difficult thing to pull off correctly. You could just be as straightforward as possible and just make it a digital version of the board game. You could also add some quality of life changes you can only get from a video game, or add some extra challenges and modes to make it a bit more single-player focused. For most of these adaptations, I believe the crux of whether or not it's good relies on the quality of the actual board game, but it is something that you could easily mess up. Kaishito, they didn't mess it up, but it is a very bare minimum adaptation of the board game. You can play local multiplayer with three others or play the CPU, and there's only one difficulty. No special modes, unless you count the credits as a mode. Thus, your enjoyment of the game relies on how much you just like playing the base game against your friends or the CPUs over and over again. I should probably explain the rules, but that's always the worst part of playing a board game, right? Anytime you go to a board game meetup and someone is just going on and on about the rules, everyone is thinking, listen, I'll just learn by playing. There's actually a chain of board game cafes in Tokyo called Jelly Jelly Cafe. I've been there a few times, both solo and with my wife. It's fun because you just pay a flat fee and you can play as many board games as you like, but when you join a group of hardcore board gamers, you just kind of pray that you know what you're doing. Though one time I went with my wife and we had to join this other guy because if you don't reserve a table ahead of time, you got to play with the other groups. So it was this guy who was a kind of an antsy college student, my wife and I. We played a few games and my wife, who has probably never played a board game outside of the game of life, completely smoked him. She barely knew the rules, but persevered through sheer beginner's luck. It was amazing. Though I don't know if you'll ace Kaishito the first few rounds through pure beginner's luck. The game has you move tiles on a 4x4 grid. 16 tiles, 4 colors each. Around the grid are chips that you can get by matching tiles to that row or column. So let's say a row as a reward has a chip with 3 yellow. In order to get that chip, you need to end your turn with 3 yellow tiles on that row. The chips go towards your point total, but you can also use the chips to give you an advantage on your move. This is one of the more interesting elements of the game, as sometimes you don't necessarily go for what chip grants you the most points, but instead you're collecting abilities that you can use to give you an advantage, especially later on in the game. For example, you can only normally swap tiles once per turn, but if you use a red chip, it can give you 2 more swaps. Yellow chips give you the ability to take multiple chips per round, green chips let you lower the requirement for taking chips, like you can now take a 3 green chip when only 2 green are in a row. And finally, blue chips don't do anything, but they grant you double points. The real meat of the game's strategic element is trying to figure out which chips you should grab and then using them at key moments in the game. It does somewhat lean towards hoarding them to the end. Those last few rounds, all the easy chips have been taken, so you just have rows and columns that have harder conditions to grab a chip, like 4 red in the same column. Seems impossible, but if you saved up red, you can move more, then you can also combo that into green to grab a 4 red chip when there are actually only 2 red on the row, so don't just blow your chips early on. As a game, the core fundamentals are easy to understand, but require a good deal of strategy. The chip layout is random each time, so each game feels unique. As for the aforementioned wagashi, all the game pieces look like round glass tiles with wagashi inside them. They look absolutely amazing. I can definitely see the appeal of owning it as a physical board game. What's great is that while all the colors share a similar wagashi theme, each individual piece is different. So the red has rabbit-shaped wagashi, but each tile has a unique wagashi inside of it. Now, would I like this game if they replaced wagashi with anything else? I mean, maybe not as much. The theming is really just up my alley, which I think is a big part of making a successful board game. There are some big marks against it, though. For one, no difficulty levels. I suppose if you get really good at the game, you could probably just clean house. I'm not there yet, I've only won a few times, but even something like Clubhouse Games has multiple difficulty levels you can unlock, which encourages you to keep playing. Also, the rules are actually somewhat vague and poorly translated. It does not get into the intricacies of strategy, and outright misstates some stuff. For example, if you want a 2-green chip on a row, you need 2 green tiles. But the rules make it seem like they need to be touching each other, which is absolutely not the case. You can have green, red, blue, green on a row, and still get that 2-green tile. This was a mechanic I was horribly confused about playing the game because I didn't understand why the computer could take certain pieces. The UI is also a little clunky, and the game doesn't explain well how you can actually use the chips. You need to use a red chip before you move, then after you end a turn, you're granted an opportunity to use a yellow chip, then a green chip. This is something the rules do not touch on, but it's vital for victory. It very much is a bare-bones digital version of a pretty neat board game with great theming. I don't know realistically how long it would hold your attention unless you just really get into it, or have a board game group. But it's only $13 on the eShop, and it will probably go on sale sooner than later, so if it at least sounded interesting, it might be worth a pickup. Otherwise, it's not going to change your world, but the wagashi does look amazing. The other game I've been playing, I finished Princess Peach Showtime. I cleared it in about 5 hours to 9 hours and 59 minutes. Only Nintendo knows my true playtime. I talked about the game on the last episode of the podcast, but here are my final thoughts on Good Feels Swing at a Princess Peach game. The game honestly surpassed my expectations. I didn't expect a whole lot, since I was wondering if I would just be bored, since it seemed aimed at very, very young gamers. But Showtime is just completely overflowing with creativity and charm. It's not a by-the-numbers game at all. Instead, it's surprisingly ambitious, albeit one that is still very, very simple and straightforward. The game focuses more on gameplay variety and spectacular set pieces over Twitch platforming or intense action. Last episode, I said the spectacle wasn't up to Kirby level, but after clearing it, there are definitely some awesome stages that ramp up the excitement. You race trains, have a big kaiju battle, escape an exploding airship, thwart a terrorist attack. Peach can do it all. I don't see Mario doing this. He gets a star and then he's out. And the stage gimmick and costume changes allow the devs to put Peach in a lot of strange situations you wouldn't find Mario in. They basically turn Peach into some sort of even simpler version of Kirby, but all the abilities are quite fun to use, even though there's not a lot of depth to each one. I will say it was very smart to not just have all the costumes be different attacks. Having some that aren't focused on combat at all keeps the game from feeling stale or too action-focused. But honestly, I do lean towards the big action set pieces over the minigame-focused stages. Alright, ultimate costume ranking. 1. Kung Fu. 2. Ninja. 3. Cowgirl. 4. Patissier. 5. Superhero. 6. Detective. 7. Dashing Thief. 8. Figure Skater. 9. Mermaid. 10. Swordfighter. None of them are bad, though. I would rank Swordfighter the lowest since it is by far the most basic, especially compared to all the other combat ones. But it's mostly just the tutorial costume that teaches players the mechanics of the game, so I can't hate on it. Plus, Peach looks really stylish in her musketeer outfit. Showtime is the game that needed to be made to put Peach back in the main character spotlight. Something kids who have never played a real game before can try out. It's not punishing, even if you die, you just lose some coins, and the mechanics are really easy to grasp. The main complaint people will have with the game, though, is just that it's very, very easy, with no real depth to the mechanics and limited flexibility in how you tackle a stage. There's no real exploration or notable challenging segments. It does just feel like you are going along for the ride. Every challenge just has one thing you gotta do, and you just do it with minimal thought. I think this is why I quite like the detective outfit, because there are some puzzles that do require a bit of thinking. Nothing crazy, but the puzzles are pretty different and have a fun theming around them. The main challenging aspect comes from the collectibles. In pure Good Feel fashion, there's about a billion of them. Mostly just stars you find in the stage, but there's also some costumes you can earn as well. Many of them are quite well hidden. I think there are only a few stages where I got all the collectibles the first time through. And since the game is so short, this is the main impetus to keep playing it after the credits roll. There's even a new unlockable after you beat the game, just in case you try to 100% it beforehand. Good Feel always has something up their sleeves to stretch out the length of the game. Honestly, I didn't really bother with the collectible aspect. In a Mario game, of course, I try to 100% it, because it's fairly manageable, and it's just fun to replay levels. But in Good Feel games, you gotta really have that special lobe in your brain that makes you want to collect every single little thing. Me, I'm one and done. but maybe I might play through some of the more spectacular stages again one day if I get in a peachy mood. If the game does well, Peach now has her own franchise. It is a little sad that it's obviously below Super Mario and Luigi's Mansion in quality, but hey, it's game one. I think there's a lot of potential for future games down the line. The costume gimmick is good, so let's keep that, but maybe give Peach more abilities, again closer to something like Kirby. I understand them not wanting to make it too hard or complex, but if you make Peach powerful enough, kids can just brute force their way through stages, while experienced gamers can experiment more and appreciate some of the more richer mechanics. I would also love to see co-op. Throw Daisy or Rosalina in here. And maybe lean a bit more into the non-combat stages. I think this area has the most room for growth in terms of new ideas they could introduce. A possible Peach Showtime series has way more room for creativity as opposed to a Craft Yoshi game, for example. Like, what are they going to add to the next Yoshi game that will get people excited? Though hey, maybe Yoshi and Peach can team up. I'm trying to think if Peach has ever ridden Yoshi, and honestly, no, maybe? Yoshi is not in Super Mario Bros. 2, she's captured in World, Yoshi isn't in 3D Land, Peach isn't playable in any of the new games. I guess Peach can ride Yoshi in Wonder, but that's another character and not like a power-up. So in short, make a Yoshi cross Peach game. And also throw Kirby in there, why not? Now, while I had a nice time with Princess Peach Showtime, it is hard to automatically recommend. I mean, it's a $60 game that's about 5 to 10 hours max. But if you want a more chill experience after playing some massive game, or you really like Peach, or you're buying it for a young child, Showtime has a lot to offer and gets me excited about the potential future of the franchise. Honestly, I would much rather have Goodfield work on a sequel to this game over a new Yoshi game. Or just do the team up, nothing's stopping them. That's it for games, now for the news. No Nintendo Direct just yet, but we do have some Nintendo news to chat about. Nintendo finally released some details on the upcoming Endless Ocean Luminous. The flow of the game seems to be you diving into somewhat randomly generated oceans, where you explore, observe fish, and find treasures. Doing so will increase your diver rank, which unlocks new things to do and see. You can also go online with other divers, and there are even special online missions to take part in. Though it does seem very simple on the surface, there seems to be a lot of content in the game. At least 578 fish, a lot of different biomes like underwater temples, sunken ships, glaciers, and so on. You can take pictures of the fish, and yes, even selfies. How many people can say they have a selfie with a great white shark? There also seem to be a lot of rare treasures, but the treasures mostly just seem to be gleaming dots that you interact with, and then it shows a JPEG of what you got. I would vastly prefer if the treasures were 3D objects on the map that you could actually see, a la Pikmin. But maybe it's integrated well into the game, let's see. I'm pretty excited for the game. It'll be my first Endless Ocean title, and it seems like they are really packing it in with a lot of things to do and see. The randomly generated oceans, with the seed you can share, is straight out of a roguelike, which is an interesting take on the game. Side Order was a fascinating take on the genre, so I wonder if other devs associated with Nintendo are getting the roguelike bug. Anyways, Endless Ocean is about a month away, and rest assured, I will be talking a lot about it. Things are also ramping up at Universal Studios Japan with the Donkey Kong expansion. YouTuber LCA Studios recently posted a video of test rides of the minecart ride that will be the big attraction in the section. The ride is supposedly quite innovative, and the main feature is that it has a false track. The track that it looks like you're riding on is just purely for appearance. Instead, it's attached to another mechanism on the side. This makes it seem like you're going to jump over the track, but don't worry, you're safe. Probably. The video doesn't show the ride in detail, but you can see some glimpses of the false track in effect in a few shots. I liked the Mario Kart ride, but this one has potential to be even more exciting if they pull it off. It looks like the DK part of Super Nintendo World in Japan is pretty much done. I've come across some rumors that USJ might get a ticket price increase in June, which has people speculating that the DK section would open around then or July. I don't think I can make it down there this year, but hopefully I can get someone who did attend to come on the podcast. And there's a bunch of new Nintendo merch, the biggest of course being an official Earthbound ruler from Hobonichi Mother Project. The ruler is an iconic item in the series that does absolutely nothing, but you can own a real one, made of bamboo from the Shiga Prefecture in Japan. It's on sale now on Hobonichi Mother Project's official store. Itoi and crew announced that this year they will have a lot of new Mother merch and events. So far, we've gotten some interesting items, but nothing too crazy. I am always amazed about how much merch they can squeeze out of this very dormant series. Uniqlo is also going to start carrying Tears of the Kingdom themed shirts this month in Japan. The designs are pretty so-so, to be honest. Uniqlo gaming collabs used to be absolutely amazing. Just look at those early Metal Gear ones. But these days, it's just promo art slapped on a shirt, and it's way too minimalist. Not sure if I'll pick them up. I already own a Tears of the Kingdom shirt, and honestly, probably one is enough. Something I don't own, though, is a Lika-chan doll. But there will be a special Kirby-themed Lika-chan doll in September. If you don't know who Lika-chan is, she's basically Japan's answer to Barbie. But she is much younger and more anime-looking compared to, I guess, the quote-unquote realistic Barbie. Last year, there was a Mario-themed Lika-chan doll, and I do wonder if there'll be some more Nintendo collabs in the future. Metroid Lika-chan? Finally, Sané is releasing a plushie of Moss from Pikmin 4 in June. Looks nice, just as expected from Sané. I have to think that the Leafling plushies are next. Outside of the Bulborb, there are not a lot of enemy plushies, which is a gap they need to fill. Last bit of news, F-Zero Maximum Velocity was added to Nintendo Switch Online. This is the first GBA F-Zero game. There are actually three GBA F-Zero games, but the last one is Japan only. Like most people, I've only played the first one, and supposedly, that is the best one. It's developed by IndieCube, one of their first projects with Nintendo. The sequels were developed by Suzak, a company that doesn't exist anymore, but they also developed Wario Master of Disguise. So you can now play three 16-bit looking F-Zero games on Switch. What more can you ask for? On that amazing note, let's wrap up. Thanks as always for listening. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on your favorite app. Leave a 5-star review as well, it helps with visibility. The podcast is also available on YouTube, so like and subscribe there as well. I'm on Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram, just search for Tokyo Game Life or find the links in the podcast description. If you like the podcast, be sure to share it with your friends and on social media. If there's anything you want me to talk about or cover, don't be shy, just message me on Twitter. The next episode will be on April 21st. See you next time. Matane!